and I think the rustling settled. So Daniel 10, verse 1. In the third year of King Cyrus of Persia, a word was revealed to Daniel, who was named Belteshazzar. The word was true, and it concerned a great conflict. He understood the word, having received understanding in the vision. At that time, I, Daniel, had been mourning for 3 weeks. I had eaten no rich food, no meat or wine had entered my mouth, and I had not anointed myself at all for the full 3 weeks. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, that is the Tigris, I looked up and saw a man clothed in linen with a belt of gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like beryl, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sound of his words like the roar of a multitude. I, Daniel, alone saw the vision. The people who were with me did not see the vision, though a great trembling fell upon them, and they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone to see this great vision. My strength left me, and my complexion grew deathly pale, and I retained no strength. Then I heard the sound of his words, and when I heard the sound of his words, I fell into a trance, face to the ground. But then a hand touched me and roused me to my hands and knees. He said to me, "Daniel, greatly beloved, pay attention to the words that I am going to speak to you. Stand on your feet, for I have now been sent to you." So while he was speaking this word to me, I stood up, trembling. He said to me, "Do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia opposed me 21 days. So Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I left him there with the prince of the kingdom of Persia, and have come to help you understand what is to happen to your people at the end of days. For there is a further vision for those days." While he was speaking these words to me, I turned to face toward the ground and was speechless. Then one in human form touched my lips, and I opened my mouth to speak and said to the one who stood before me, "My Lord, because of the vision, such pains have come upon me that I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? For I am shaking, no strength remains in me, and no breath is left in me." Again, one in human form touched me and strengthened me. He said, "Do not fear, greatly beloved. You are safe. Be strong and courageous." When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, Let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me." Then he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? Now I must return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I am through with him, the prince of Greece will come. But I am to tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is no one with me who contends against these princes, except Michael, your prince. As for me, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to support and strengthen him."
Hello. Can everybody hear me? Yeah? Wonderful. If there's one thing I've learnt since being on placement here, it's never to agree to swap a preach until you've checked the readings. John Coutts wasn't lying last week when he said in not so few words, that he'd dodged a bullet and when he'd swapped his preach, at which point I had this feeling of dread come over me. So, let me pray. Heavenly Father, thank you for this time together this evening. Thank you for the words that you give us. Thank you for the spirit that you bring to us so that we can think about your word and preach your word and listen to your word. Amen. It is generally considered that Daniel chapters 10 to 12 forms a whole, that they are all part of the one vision, and that it forms the finale to the visions we've heard about in chapter 7 onwards, and whose main focus has been on Antiochus Epiphanes and his eventual downfall. It's split into three parts: an introduction, and our focus this evening, the revelation itself, and the epilogue. Of course, having said all of that, it may very well be that chapters 10 through to 12 are a unit, but it would be very difficult to understand our passage this evening without understanding who Daniel was and what had come before. So it is equally important to remember the previous chapter where Gabriel had pronounced the overthrow of the opposition. The chapters begin with the author telling us about the historical setting, that it was the third year of the reign of Cyrus, king of Persia, a time when Jews who had been in exile were finally allowed back to Jerusalem, where the temple and the city themselves are in ruins and no sacrifices are being made. Daniel's prayer in chapter 9 was about this very thing. We are given this information for a number of reasons. Firstly, because it tells us of the importance of the writing which is to follow and directs us to it. But it's also likely that this was deliberately done to form a link between all four visions. In chapter 7, the first of the four visions, there is a similar third-person introduction. The second part of the first verse tells us that what we are about to hear is not only true, but that Daniel understood the revelation. We are to understand the following as an actual event, that it did happen. There's some question over the word that the NRSV has translated as conflict. It can mean army or warfare, and in this context, it's difficult to know whether it's referring to Daniel's struggle to understand the vision or whether it relates to the contents of the following revelation. So having got all of the preamble out of the way, the rest of the passage, verse 2 through to 11:1, is written in the first person. Daniel is telling us about the experience he had. In those days, I, Daniel, was mourning for 3 weeks. I ate no delicacies, no meat or wine entered my mouth, nor did I anoint myself at all for the full 3 weeks. Daniel was a man of prayer, a man who humbled himself and sought forgiveness of Israel's sins and for his own sins. He finds himself in a situation where he needs clarification on the previous vision, and the people would probably have been expecting some form of assurance. So Daniel prepares himself for a further revelation by fasting or mourning, as it's been described here. He restricts his diet and doesn't anoint himself with oils. Other instances of mourning or fasting usually only lasted for 7 days for people such as Ezra. This was a particularly long period of Daniel preparing himself for the coming revelation. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a man clothed in linen with a belt of fine gold around his waist. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and the sounds of his words like the sound of a multitude. Now, you would be forgiven for thinking, because I did at this stage, that perhaps after not having eaten proper food for 3 weeks, and probably not drinking properly either, that Daniel was either hallucinating or perhaps someone had slipped something into his tea. Perhaps you are thinking that this vision was in his mind, that it was very real to Daniel, but not something that would have been experienced by others. But it becomes obvious that this is not the case when we read further that Daniel was in fact with friends And that although they didn't see the vision, they were aware of a great trembling. So aware that they fled to hide themselves. Paul's experience on the road to Damascus, where he too saw a vision, in this instance it was Jesus, was very like this. He too was not alone. And the people he was with also were aware that something was happening. Acts 9, verses 7 reads, "The men who were traveling with him stood speechless, hearing the voice but seeing no one." Daniel's description of the man he saw on the riverbank, the messenger that brings the revelation, is very detailed. In previous visions, we're told the messenger's name, usually Gabriel, and so it is assumed that the messenger here is Gabriel again. However, the messenger here is described as a man. He appears more radiant than Gabriel and greater than Michael. The topaz, or beryl, lightning, flaming torches, and feet like burnished brass are descriptions also found in Ezekiel's vision, where they appear in the description of four living creatures that form God's chariot throne in Ezekiel 1, 7, 13, 16, and 24. Some believe that Daniel was experiencing a direct vision of God, or perhaps Jesus, that the effect that the vision had on Daniel was so radically different and extreme compared to his previous visions, it had to be a direct vision of God. Whether or not the messenger was Gabriel, Michael, another angel, or Jesus himself, we shall probably never know for sure. But I think what is important is that Daniel was so prepared that he recognized that the vision was from God. So, I was left alone and saw this great vision, and no strength was left in me. My radiant appearance was fearfully changed, and I retained no strength. Then I heard the sound of his words, and as I heard the sound of his words, I fell on my face in deep sleep with my face to the ground. Far from being excited by the experience, Daniel is completely drained of his strength at the start of the vision. So I sat with this part of the passage for quite a bit, and firstly trying to work out what points in my life would I have described myself as radiant, or and it's probably not something that you would describe yourself as, but I don't think I've ever had anybody call me radiant either. The closest thing I came to being radiant was when I was pregnant and someone described me as being glowing. But I do remember a time when I was about 12, and I woke up relatively early, ready to start the day. I walked into the bathroom, and all of a sudden, I can recall this really odd sensation. I could literally feel the blood draining from my head. I had gone from being lovely and warm to cold very quickly, and from a lovely shade of pink to a not-so-lovely shade of grey, no puns, please. Yes, you guessed it, my sugar levels had dropped and I had fainted, hitting my head on the wall on the way down. Daniel's experience was not that different, although the only vision I saw was my mum bringing me a sweet cup of tea and a digestive biscuit. Daniel's vision, however, was more profound, and he remembered it. I, on the other hand, only vaguely remember my experience. Now, I don't want you all going away thinking that I think Daniel was hallucinating or suffering from lack of glucose. Quite the opposite. I believe that there are many things about the heavenly realms that we know nothing about. And occasionally, God allows us a glimpse of it if we are prepared and open-minded enough to recognize it when it comes. That, of course, is why Daniel's preparation was so important. If he had not been prepared, perhaps he wouldn't have recognized a messenger from God. "And behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and feet. And he said to me, 'O Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you and stand upright, for now I have been sent to you.' And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up trembling." Daniel awoke from his deep sleep And the hand that touched Daniel enabled him to move out of his kneeling position, as did the word of command to stand up straight. The expression, man greatly loved, means one in whom God takes delight. Few others are described in the same way in the scriptures. Abraham was called a friend of God, and Mary was described as having found favor with God. For both Abraham and Mary, suffering was inescapable, and so too was the suffering of Daniel. But Daniel did it anyway. He knew that this had to be done. Daniel's preparation and the vision left him in a vulnerable state, one where he needed the strength of God to continue. Then he said to me, "Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand and humbled yourself before God, your words have been heard, and I have come because of your words. The prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days, but Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, for I was left there with the kings of Persia, and came to make you understand what is to happen to your people in the latter days, for the vision is for days yet to come." For me, this section is probably the most important. And the words, "I have come because of your words," is perhaps the most important part of the whole passage. God didn't send his messenger because he needed to convey a message. He didn't send the messenger because he had a plan that needed fulfilling. God sent his messenger to Daniel because Daniel humbled himself, because Daniel asked him to, because of his words. And to top that off, it is this section that reminds us of the spiritual and heavenly kingdoms that we are so often forget are there. The messenger explains that Daniel's prayer had in fact been heard and answered some 21 days earlier when Daniel began his preparation. And yet it's only now that Daniel sees the messenger. Why is this? Because the heavenly counterpart, the prince of the kingdom of Persia, was to blame. He had delayed the messenger getting to Daniel, and it was only when the chief prince, Michael, came that the original messenger was able to take his leave for Daniel. So what is happening here has its counterpart in the spiritual, but the reverse is true, because Michael is the prince of Israel. And so it would appear that the heavenly kingdom is not a replica of that on earth, where little Israel has no prestige and Persia was the dominating power at the time. When he had spoken to me according to these words, I turned my face toward the ground and was mute. And behold, one in the likeness of the children of man touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spoke. I said to him who stood before me, "O my Lord, by reason of the vision pains have come upon me, and I retain no strength. How can my Lord's servant talk with my Lord? For now no strength remains in me, and no breath is left in me." Again, one having the appearance of a man touched me and strengthened me. And he said, "O man greatly loved, fear not, peace be with you. Be strong and of good courage." And as he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, "Let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me." For a second and third time, Daniel had lost strength. And this time, prostrating himself on the ground, unable to speak, he is strengthened again by the messenger, who this time is described as one in the likeness of children of man, and the second time have the appearance of man. Then he said, "Do you know why I've come to you? But now I will return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go out, behold, the prince of Greece will come. But I will tell you what is inscribed in the book of truth. There is none who contends by my side against these except Michael, your prince." The heavenly warfare, which will be directed towards Persia and then towards Greece, is because they will both in turn have power over God's people. And although they seem defenseless, those people have on their side the messenger and Michael. The conflict will be devastating and will bring doubt about the survival of God's people. But the coming vision is there to reassure that no matter how bleak it may seem, God has got this and is so fully in control that he is able to disclose the series of events before they happen. In fact, they have been inscribed in his book of truth, a figurative book that is described in Psalm 139. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. And as for me, in the first year of Darius the Mede, I stood up to confirm and strengthen him. It was in the first year of Darius the Mede that the people were told to return to Jerusalem. And although it appeared to be at the behest of the polytheistic ruler, Michael had been strengthened. His people had been set free to return to their land. Last week, John spoke to us about the power of intercessory prayer. And I believe that this is an extension of that. Daniel knew that there was opposition from the local people to the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. And although he had a certain amount of kudos himself, he recognized that this was not a human battle, but instead a battle that could only be fought on a spiritual plane. That is why he chose the weapons of prayer and fasting. But it was only when the messenger turned up that he realized the depth of the spiritual struggle going on. This was a battle that Daniel could only fight on his knees. But having the veil pulled back meant that prayer became even more vital. This passage has given me no end of grief trying to understand what's going on, but I'm glad I spent the time deconstructing it. As we watch the news and recognize the horrors that are going on in our world, perhaps understanding that the warfare that we are experiencing is only the top of the iceberg, that the spiritual or heavenly kingdom is also fighting an immense battle, will help us to understand our place. Daniel recognized that he could not do anything in the physical world to fix the problems that he and his people were facing. And so we too should recognize that although it doesn't mean that we should give up trying, sometimes we have to accept that we can't solve the world's problems on our own. As we see the reports of the latest refugee crisis, governments doing things that we don't agree with, or worse, governments doing nothing, perhaps first and foremost, we should humble ourselves and pray, because it is at this point that God will give us direction. Remembering that God actually wants us to pray, and remembering the messenger was sent because of Daniel's words. Daniel became weak and could not continue with the vision without being strengthened. It called for the surrender of all his will and all his mind. Even Michael needed to be strengthened. Let us accept that we cannot do this without God's strength, that no matter how much we want to do, we need the digestive biscuit and the sweet cup of tea that is God's strength in our lives. Daniel was aware that in order to experience God, to experience the vision, he had to be prepared. And so we too should be prepared to experience God. It's probably not practical for us to not eat for 3 weeks, but maybe we need to consider how we can be prepared to meet with Jesus. Amen.